Hey, you're listening to The Morning Show with Aaron. And in our studio, I've got our councillor, Lisa Thompson. Good morning, Lisa.
Morning, Aaron. And what a beautiful morning in Whangaroa.
I'm quite surprised. There's a bit of a chilly easterly out there, but it's...
Oh, it was quite chilly. I left home because I walked in.
It looks nice. It looks nice. Oh, you
beautiful.
Walked in. I know where it took you an hour.
I walked in from home because I've decided I need to beat the feet a lot more. Because
you were too much sitting around at council eating pastries.
Eating pastries, but I certainly have been sitting around far too much and not just in council. So, you know, when you get to middle age, it's time to use it or lose it. So I've been out beating the feet as regularly as I can from home. But it's just a lovely way to connect with the environment and the community as well.
Did you come in across the walk bridge and through the new path on what's called the Weenira Walkway now?
Yeah, I did, and it's fantastic. So it's going to be great when it's finished, because I was a bit sceptical about, you know, widening it and all of that, and it was all right. But actually, it's really comfortable when you meet groups of people. It's comfortable walking past. It feels less precarious than what it did when I had small children, and that, you know, if you pass groups of people, you felt you might end up floating out to...
Well, I remember someone, when our kids were preschool age, someone else's preschool child did fall down the side.
Some people
there was
had.
A petition, but at that point people were like, oh, we don't need that, it's regular.
Yeah.
But now there's a lot more people walking.
There is a lot more people walking, so it feels lovely to have to actually have that wideness. So, yeah, they've done a great job. And, of course, I walk past the roading upgrade that they're undertaking at Papahua.
So that started now,
has it? That started. So that actually started over a week ago. So that's looking good as well, just widening of that and doing up that sort of work. So there seems to be lots going on. And so, I actually just saw some of the staff in the garden where the parklet is, just outside of the kebab shop.
Yes.
They're putting in new plants and things like that.
Oh, doing some gardening. Okay.
Yeah, doing some gardening in there. So certainly there seems to be a lot going on.
So while you've mentioned Papahua, and I was talking with the mayor about this yesterday, although I used it as an example of something, but anyway, I'm not going to get into that backstory. The erosion. So we've got erosion happening on two sides of Papahua. There's the ocean side, and then there's the inlet side. And we know the inlet side has been created by the loss of what was effectively a groin with the old bridge. I think that's certainly an issue to Ngāti Mahanga and also to the campground board and the soccer fields and a lot of us.
That's right, yeah. Aaron. And you know, I guess that we have to look at a number of factors when we're considering what we will do in that area. And, you know, council is really looking at the retreat for areas that are low-lying, like...
But we're about to rebuild the road. Right,
that's right. But, you know, that's for... We needed to do work on that as well. It's a high-use area. And if we're looking at the next 30 to 50 to 100 years, that's going to take more forward planning about what that looks like for that area particularly. Excuse me. And so on Monday... next week, the Holiday Park Governance Board and staff, we've got our strategic planning hui that we will be doing on Monday, and part of that is actually looking at mitigation for the erosion in areas, and particularly from a hapu perspective, nearer where the urupara is, where Te Awaitaia and others are buried. So looking at options for that area and what that might be. And the area on the seaward side by the airfield, that we're in an erosion phase. And if one just looks at the recent article from the Kōkiri with the removal of the stage, not the removal, but the uplifting and placement of the stage that was nearer the erosion area. It's a dynamic environment. And over time, if one were to look at the aerial photos that have been taken, I think since the early 1940s, those areas come and go. And I know that because we're humans, we get concerned about the areas that we have use of, but Mother Nature and Tangaroa have that relationship of the moving sands and the moving environment. So right now, You know, and I think Coast Care put up that lovely short film that they've done around erosion phases. So we have to be really cognizant of that and the decisions that we make about whatever we put in to that landscape.
Well, if it
and
is,
we will
if it
need
is.
To speak with the owners of that area and look at what those options are, and that, you know, from the council perspective, it does come at a cost to the ratepayers as well.
Who are the owners technically right now?
I'm not going to say that.
It's still in process.
With district council,
right? Okay.
So it's still under district council, but we have made a decision in council around the coastal erosion about retreat. Because we know we just have to look up at Port Waikato, and I'm sure Jackie Church touched on that when you spoke, interviewed her the other day,
yeah.
That, you know, at Port Waikato, we had our first governance board hui with regard to erosion on Monday. And, yeah, we've seen significant erosion activity at Port Waikato, and that, again, comes and goes, you know, depending on what's happening and how much sand is coming backwards and forwards.
I imagine, because that's the open coast there, it's a lot more vigorous.
It's really vigorous. And, you know, locals who've lived there for a long time haven't seen such vigorous displays of erosion. But I think also it's combined, I think, you know, where people are quite shocked in some ways because the popularity of areas are used by more people. So I guess when people are using a place and it's closed, for example, the car park, they're quite shocked by that. But it is a reality of living in a coastal community is the dynamic of that changing environment. And sometimes we have to think about the human use of that area, but also just the natural cycles that are undertaken and are exacerbated by the effects of climate change as well.
And human use. And one thing I thought about, because Papahua is a sandbank, and with the way that plants work on sandbanks, it's actually the sort of thing that could continue to keep rising with the sea level because of sand being blown into it, except for the fact that it's no longer a sandbank because we've turned it into sports fields and a campground and an airfield. So it can't really build back up in quite the same way as it used to, which is – this just kind of occurred to me recently. It's not a very helpful thought, but it's just kind of there.
Well, it's good. We must have those discussions and planning now. You know, we're probably 10 years late in terms of that ability for thinking about it, but at least we are starting now. But, yeah, we should have probably looked at it 10 years ago, you know, in terms of what actions we could take, and it might have been easier to put in groins and things like that at that time as opposed to now, you know.
Although all the experts are saying the groin is a thing, but seawalls don't necessarily work that well.
That's right.
I think people think there's a seawall near the changing sheds over at Papahua, and people think that worked because the sand is all in front of it, but I think the sand's all in front of it because of the groin effect of the old bridge.
Yeah, I'm not a scientist, so I've had people
on saying that walls are very counterproductive.
And I also think that some people I noticed on the post on the notice board, someone had posted Aotea has worked it out, you know, and they've got big rocks along their waterfront. But again, it's probably a different dynamic. So in terms of
that's not working it out. That's replacing your beach with rocks. I don't consider that working it out, especially if the sand is eventually going to come back in maybe 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, or go further, as happens,
undermine the rocks.
Yeah, so, you know, so there's a lot to be considered in terms of what we can and can't do realistically.
Yeah, getting that message out there that it's a natural cycle is the hard one, because I think people feel under attack. They feel like the sea's trying to take over the land. And I felt like that until I had this interview with
Angela. But it's a natural process as well.
With Stacey from Coast Care and Angeline Green, so we had a big conversation about it here in the studio, and I got to the understanding that, yeah, it will eat away and then it will come back and, it'll move.
Yeah, it comes and goes, and that's the dynamic environment. And I think we forget that because as humans we want our environment to bend to our will, so we can
do... As modern humans, we do.
As modern humans, whereas, you know, if you probably looked at a hapu perspective, there were different places where people lived or congregated depending on the time of year and for what purpose, if it was for kai gathering or whatever, you know. So it wasn't like we have now a permanent home in one spot. It was, in a way, I suppose, fluid, depending on the seasons.
Yeah, yeah, and the homes were not so intensive and so and they big and hard,
like
to, and hard to move.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It was a very different.
So it'll be a challenge for us moving forward, you know, particularly as coastal people.
Yeah. So civil defence, let's just change a different topic. Although it's kind of related.
It is. It's absolutely related. So
Resilience planning.
Resilience planning. So, you know, that Dennis and I are working on our plan, and we touched on that. Chris, the community board, has seen the plan, and Chris Rayner said it was a very good one. So I met with Gabriel Parson from Raglan Naturally, and we're working on getting messaging out to the community. For example, in the Chronicle, are you prepared? This is what preparedness looks like for a household of blah, blah, blah. You know, make sure you've got X, Y, and Z. And then Scott, who's from our staff, we've got a house plan. So we'll be going out to the community shortly with, you know, opportunities to work on what it looks resilience looks like in your whare. Say if the power went out, what do you need if there was flooding? So we're going to be doing that very shortly. So we're doing some planning around that and the messaging in the Chronicle. And I was fortunate enough to catch up with one of the Time Bank people last week, last Friday actually, to have a kōrero about how Time Bank could possibly be involved. So Tanya Ashman has put her hand up to be involved in the in some of the activities, and so came up with an idea of a prepared cafe as opposed to a repair cafe. Yeah. So having an opportunity for the community to come along to look like what preparedness looks like for a household or for a person or a family of four, so they can see what that looks like. And we've yet to think about do we have examples. Like for my house, I already have heaps of stuff, candles and things like that. So bringing along what preparedness looks like for me and my whare, and what others can do without spending a lot of money. So, you know, we should really be prepared for 3 days to be self-sufficient, and also getting to know your neighbours. So importance for urban and rural areas to know who your neighbours are, who might be vulnerable, who might need support, checking in and sharing resources. You know, because in my household, we've got a generator so we can hook that up. We've got a barbecue, all of those sorts of things. We've got a gas hob.
Fireplace?
No, haven't got a fireplace
actually.
We've
got a fireplace, which was very handy when we had the power cut.
Yeah, but my partner said, what's stopping us from having a little fire outside anyway?
You might do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, in a brazier or something, but we don't have, our house is only small anyway, you know. So, you know, so doing the are you prepared cafes, so rolling out all of that. So it's not just on civil defence on that community plan, but building in should something happen that we're prepared as a community and people can take care of them for themselves for a minimum of 3 days.
I think we need to do some messaging on the radio as well, since we would be broadcasting during an emergency.
Well, I'll share with you, because actually what was brought up by the woman that I met from the Time Bank was around where could people go to get updates, even if it was just powers out.
And that was a problem with the power cut. I ran into people downtown wandering around going, what's happening?
Yeah, so it was suggested, could it be at Raglan Radio? And it said, well, that's if Raglan Radio is operating. You know,
depends on the emergency. We might be somewhere else.
Yeah, you might be somewhere else. So, but it's a good point. So, you know, who would be responsible for having a whiteboard or something out somewhere, if it's the Raglan Club or Raglan Radio, you know, so that's something that community response group, you know, can think about those sorts of comms. It may not be a civil defence emergency. It may not be a state of emergency like the power outage, but people want some comfort, and it might simply be power outage time that we're getting back unknown, watch the space for further information. You know, just so then people are aware. And that one place of truth, as opposed to perhaps online spaces that everyone has an opinion conflicting views.
That Power Cut Day, Mike from the Community House came in to see me in the afternoon. He said, I've heard three different times that the power's coming back on. What have you heard?
Yeah, so and you were so great. Raglan Radio was so fantastic with staying up to date and, I guess, advocating and getting into the ear of the power provider. But as I said when I was having a discussion about resilience, you know, the providers may not know because they are under the pump doing the mahi, trying to work out what is wrong and what are the timeframes. So there's that. There will probably be a time where it's a vacuum.
And we had the issue with them that they didn't want to say anything until they were sure about what they were saying.
Yeah.
And so it took 6 hours before we heard from Well Networks. And next time, if we have that happen again, I'll actually put more pressure on them and say...
Yeah, until we get further notice.
Yeah, it's okay to say that you don't know everything yet.
Yeah.
But you can tell people, oh, we've got 60 people out there working on it. We're doing this.
Yeah.
At least they feel cared for.
Yeah. And that they're being heard, you know, because people, and rightly so, are apprehensive and frightened in some instances. But I think there's that opportunity to lessen that anxiety is making sure that people are prepared as much as they can be to be self-sufficient, whatever that might look like for your household.
And you just mentioned the preparedness group. Is the group still looking for volunteers to be part of the structure of that, like when there's an emergency, people have jobs, certain, a few people have jobs to do?
Yes, and we'll be doing a call out for that, Dennis is leading that. So we'll be doing a call out for people who are keen to be involved, and that'll be really important roles. And then, of course, there'll be opportunities for people to be involved if we need to get, say, for example, I don't know, getting water out to people, for example, you know, if they haven't got transport or things like that. So we'll be coordinating those sorts of things. So just watch this space. But we will be putting messages out in the Chronicle. Are you prepared? Information, what that looks like as well, in line with, in partnership with Raglan Naturally.
Okay. Was there any discussion about Sound Splash during the meeting?
I didn't. I wasn't at the public forum. We will be having a discussion about that, but we didn't on Wednesday.
Okay. I know there were people there who were, because I wasn't there. People are wondering,
I wasn't
why
there. I didn't get there till 2 o'clock, actually.
So you weren't there at the start. I wasn't there at all. John Lawson wasn't there at all. My usual sources of information are out. But I did know that there were three groups applying for some of the discretionary fund, and if you totaled up everything they wanted, it was going to use up most of the discretionary fund. So I'm going to hazard a guess they didn't get.
They
didn't get much of what they wanted.
Yeah, because Ross Wallace, who's been doing a fantastic job, he's our funding representative on the community board. So he's been putting a lot of thought into how can we. Push those funds out, and really more for seeding funding for the community, because we don't have a big pool of money for the year. So the Tamata Tennis Club, the Blues Festival, and
the
Union Church all came in, and all...
No, it wasn't the Union one, was it the one on the roundabout?
Oh, the Anglican.
Anglican, yeah.
Sorry, my apologies. Came in requesting funding. And they were all, they all had their own validity because they were all quite different. So we gave $1,000 to each group, which I think was really great. And so we have decided that we will do funding rounds every second community board hui. So our next funding round will be in October, and the applications will close on the 2nd of October. But don't feel any pressure, because we will be getting comms out. Ross will be getting comms out to the community around the discretionary fund applications.
Okay, cool. I know the council is wanting to community boards to have community board plans.
And we're actually...
But you guys already kind of had one anyway. Can we talk about what might be on it, like what the board is thinking about for the future?
Well, we already, as you may be aware, you know, 3 terms ago, we already started on our 90-day planning, and we've still got that. So That's evolved over time, where we have oversight on different projects or what we want to do. And that really is our community plan for the community board. So myself, Dennis and Alison are going to meet with Dominique to look at the plan, because it's very generic. And it's what we discussed on Wednesday, is that the plans are great for community boards and community committees who perhaps never had a plan before.
Yeah.
Whereas we're quite advanced.
More proactive.
Yeah, in terms of what we have been able to do. But certainly the community board in the next year, because we're next year is an election year. So we are fast drawing to a close. We're over halfway through this term. So we're fast drawing to the end of our term. So we really want to look at what we can achieve in the next year and a bit. So we will meet with Dominique, as I mentioned, to discuss that further. And if the plan in its current form really fits Raglan, because we have our 90-day plan and so on. So, yeah, so we need to have that discussion to tweak it.
Okay. Are there specific things that are on your guys' minds at the moment?
We need to discuss that and really nut that out as a group.
Yeah. I know that something that's on a lot of people's minds is the Manu Bay breakwater.
Yeah.
We did talk with Dennis about this last week, but is that going to get resolved? That sounds like a cheeky question, but it's been going on for so long.
It has been going.
And it's been hard to get agreement from the various stakeholders.
Because the stakeholders are quite different and their perspectives and needs are quite different. And so we need to be considered about that. And ultimately, any decision will come back to the decision of council, particularly if it involves and requires further funding.
And potentially $2 million, according to a staff estimate.
Yeah, so looking at that, so we have to consider that, and whether going into the long-term planning, which we will be going into very shortly, will have a significant impact, because you know that about $880,000 equates to 1% rise in a 1% increase in rates. So if we were to look at options for modifications, for example, it would come at a cost to the ratepayer.
Mm.
You know, so we have to consider that. So council will need a full report on what that is to make an informed decision. So yes, it has been a long process, and it was exacerbated, obviously, by COVID. That's no excuse, but it has been a long time between the workshops, because workshop 3 was in 2022, and now we're in workshop 4, which happened over a week ago. And, you know, so it's taken a long time to get to this point. So it's been a drawn-out process and frustrating for all stakeholders who have been involved in that process.
So what, has someone gone away to do some task?
Yes, and it
now
will come back to infrastructure. So we, yeah.
Oh, the infrastructure committee has to look at the options.
Yeah, to look at the options.
So they've got the opinions of the various stakeholders.
Yes.
And then, so when does that, that's a subcommittee that will meet in some time in the next few weeks?
It was actually undertaken to come back in to the October.
Okay.
Infrastructure fee. So, yes, we have to be very mindful about the process and ensure that we're listening to all of the stakeholders.
Yeah, and so, but and these subcommittees, they pretty much consist of all the councillors, don't
they?
They
are.
Yeah. So every
they're a committee of council, so every councillor is actually on those. Infrastructure, sustainability and wellbeing, policy and regulatory.
So you'll need about 8 councillors to agree to spend the money.
Out of the 14. Yeah,
out of the 14, yeah.
So, folks, that's
the deal.
There will be a lot of debate from councillors, because we are very aware of affordability and other issues, and other councillors also have
They've got issues too that they
community's
passionate about.
Yeah, so so there's a lot to consider, but ultimately
they've probably got issues that their communities are not arguing about, that they're all in agreement about, because this is an issue that's where opinion is actually divided in this community.
So there's a lot to consider.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll park that again for a little while. The water tower mural. So the government has given us some funding for a new mural on the water tower. What stage?
No, the DIA. And that was under the,
I'm calling that the government.
And that was under the umbrella of Raglan Naturally. So that was through the portal of Raglan Naturally that we secured that funding in partnership with the Destination Management Organisation. So that process is still continuing. And I can't actually say anything more than that because you'll have to talk to Jacqueline Anderson, who is our project lead for the Destination Management Organisation. So I won't say any more because it's not my role to say, but I am involved.
There's a selection process, isn't there, for an artist?
There's a selection process, that's exactly right, for the water tower, so that's very exciting. So I won't say any more than that because I can't.
At some point there'll be an
announcement, so watch the space.
Yeah, the councillor is not all powerful in this situation.
No, I definitely am not all powerful.
You get ticked off.
I'm lucky if anyone listens to me.
Here's something I talked about with the mayor yesterday. I was talking about the high level of staff turnover that happens at councils in general, and our council particularly, because people can live in Hamilton and they work at about four or five different councils and swap around between them quite easily. So there's a lot of staff turnover, and I gave her an example of I used the erosion issue on this side of Papahua. And how community members had been in touch with staff and they'd start to work on something and they'd leave again. And so she took that on board. But I was like, can we not – there'll be time for a new CEO sometime in the next few years. Can we not get a CEO?
Oh, it is. We're due for the new CEO next year July 2025.
Yeah, my question will be, can we get a CEO who wants to make the place – so fun and cool and satisfying to work at that people don't want to leave? And I know people go, you just can't do that at councils. It just doesn't work like that. I know there'll be that attitude, but I'm like, can we bring in someone who wants to do that?
To be true.
And I felt cheeky asking that of the mayor.
Yeah, because and also because at the end of the day, because we're in governance, we can set the course and the direction. But ultimately, the culture is created by the staff that are in there and, you know, led by the CE. Council is a hard and thankless place to work in many ways, you know, in terms of staffing. And I would imagine for lots of staff, they do it because they love the communities that they are working in. Because if they were to go into the private sector, they would earn probably quite a considerable amount more than what they're getting
and
in
I've heard
the
that
public
is becoming
sector.
An increasing problem. I've heard from people at other councils about that,
You know, staff cop abuse, you even see it online.
Oh, I know,
council, you're all a bunch of useless and you don't know what you're doing,
stupid.
All of that sort of
stupid,
stuff.
Stupid, but it's a reality.
And you know, so it's in many ways it's thankless, but in other ways I know that there are staff who really enjoy and love working out in the community. So, and I do see at Waikato District Council that there are really cool stuff that happens. For example, at Matariki, there was a full Matariki Kai where staff bought their signature dishes to share. They had a hangi. So, and it was all staff. So 400 plus, you know, being involved. And I know that even Leanne at the holiday park, they had some of the hangi brought over from there. They had staff that were over there brought back from Ngāre Wā Wahia here to the holiday park for the staff who weren't able to make it there. So, and they've got a great initiative called the Taki Taki program, which is the in-house leadership program that any staff from the cleaning staff to the executive manager staff can participate in it. And I actually saw two of our staff from Raglan in council yesterday, and they were there to catch up with their team and the Taki Taki program, and they love it. And there's opportunities for them to do other things outside of their normal role. So even with the holiday park staff, they're now working more with the wider staff at District Council in Ngāre Wā Wahia, where there are other opportunities for growth in their roles. So there are really cool things that are happening. But, you know, sometimes people are people and they may not like an environment and or they may have opportunity elsewhere. So it's a hard one, I think, to ensure that staff stay.
The mayor did say that she was working on something, I can't remember the wording, that just an attempt to make sure that that institutional knowledge wasn't lost, that projects that, that staff were working on got passed on to someone else.
Yeah, exactly. That
to do that better.
Intellectual knowledge and and the knowledge of the business itself and the relationships, because I think what it comes down to is if you've got a staff member who's built really great relationships, and I can think about Teresa, who used to be in the comms team, and she would work closely with us through the three P's and things like that, you know, and her husband got a job down in Christchurch, so they moved. So with her went a lot of relationships and things like that, you know. So
yeah.
It's not just, I guess, that knowledge around the role. It's also those relationships that people build with communities that are really important. And sometimes those are irreplaceable.
Yeah.
And it will be a challenge.
Yeah, it usually is. Now, I had something in my head that I was going to talk about, soccer fields. So the soccer club, before COVID, there were about 200 kids at the soccer club. This year they've got 290.
Oh, and it's fantastic. And I actually had a chat with Johnny, who's in the soccer club.
Oh, he's the the president at the moment.
Okay, yep. Anyway, so we had a good chat. So I asked him to send an email to me with all of the kōrero that we had a chat about.
Yeah. So, and I know the discussion in the background, and it's kind of publicly known as well, is that the Wainuiri Reserve is a fairly obvious piece of land available to the council with some degree of flatness that could be used for sports fields, but someone needs to act on it, I guess.
That's exactly right. And and Dennis caught up with Glyn Morgan.
There's a council manager.
Yeah. And so to really push that 30 to 50 year planning around Wainuiri Reserve. So we need to really progress that. That's been on hold.
Because I used to do what Johnny did, and I had convinced, I think there was a Coastal Reserves submission process, and I convinced the councillors that, yes, down at Papahua, it just was running out of space. And now there's an extra 90 kids, although the secondary school stuff's gone up to the school. But it's definitely, yeah, I was just curious to see if stuff's going on. Because often things are going behind the scenes for quite a while before suddenly stuff happens in public. And I guess I wanted to see if that was happening.
We've had a discussion.
Yeah,
I had a kōrero with Johnny, but that hasn't gone further than that from my part. But, you know, staff are acutely aware of the pressures around resourcing for sports in Whaingaroa because, you know, there is the desire to have some sort of sports facility, indoor sports facility for basketball, for example. There's that desire to have an increased capacity for the soccer fields. There's a whole lot of things to consider, and we need to do that well to meet the needs of a growing community.
Mm. And I did also tell the mayor that we have maybe 1,000 new sections due to come online in Whangaroa as fast as they can be sold. So, and that's, I'm guessing that's another 2,500 people. I suppose some of them will be empty because we're a batch town, but that's a couple of thousand people.
Yeah.
That's
a big, and people big come and go as well, you know, and I think that, all of our communities are growing.
Yeah. And we're talking about the soccer because that's grown, but the rugby is still there, and there's new rugby league teams as well that the kids are playing. Oh, so there's growth in that and those other sports as well.
Yeah, and I think that the rugby league is quite happy where they are at the
and they've got room to expand there as well.
Yeah, and they're doing really well with all of the teams, including the women's team. So it's
the spirit around the rugby league is awesome.
Oh, it's so fantastic! Yeah. The Whai is awesome.
Yeah,
and we all got our jackets with the little Whai one in support. But
were you in the team?
No, I'd be terrible. I'd get wasted. I'm like
Kay, who works at the council, has been playing for them.
Yeah, so so is Holly. So there's quite a few. So that's awesome. I think it's really great. And I was going to mention as well, we had a solid waste subcommittee hui yesterday, which is pretty awesome, looking at you know, our solid waste planning from across the district. We're doing some cool stuff, I have to say, you know, but like up at Extreme Zero Waste, and no doubt Karen's told you, when, you know, there was a slip there, so we've done some significant work in mitigating that slip, and there's going to be some special gates put in around the...
Where are we?
Where we put the rubbish, you know, the... We throw our rubbish bags just into, so those gates for safety. And this yesterday, our staff went up to Te Kauwhata because we've got a compost hub up there. There's another one in Ngārua Wahia. There's an op shop tour that's happening. So there's loads of really cool things that have been initiated by both staff and communities through and also through our waste fund that we, you know, started, which is awesome.
So the council gets money from the Waste Minimisation Fund?
The Waste Minimisation Fund. And I know that people think, oh, some people had said, what a waste of money, spend it on other things, but it actually comes from the Waste Minimisation Fund, and it's a way of creating
a central government thing. I always wanted to let people know it's not from your rates; it's from central government.
Central government, and some of the initiatives that have come out of there are really fantastic. That, you know, we probably take them for granted because we have such a great community where we have the Repair Cafe, we've got the Growers Market, we have so many great things that happen in Whaingaroa, and so even Whaia Tilly said the other day, Tilly Turner, who's our Māori ward councillor, said that, you know, Raglan is an exemplar community where other communities need to look at what we're doing and yeah. how we're successful.
Yeah, certainly around the waste issues, definitely.
Yeah, so yeah. just cool things, and Sarah from So Love doing initiatives around the district. So there's lots going on, and we're looking at our district-wide provision for our solid waste management. So that will be something that we'll be working on, that we are working on. We've got a workshop, I think, later on this month.
So according to legislation, you have to have a food waste pickup for everyone by a certain time. Am I correct about that?
Yes, and that's from memory, I think it's by 2027, and everything is still – I could be wrong. So, Sally, if you happen to listen to this, can you correct me? But the curbside food waste collection, yes.
Which we have here, but the district doesn't.
That's right. But it's neat to see other initiatives being undertaken around food waste and education around food waste as well. So there's some really cool things happening. So if you go onto the council website, you'll see where there's workshops and other opportunities, op shop trips, all sorts of stuff. So it's really cool, actually.
Can we ask about Te Uku? Last time I spoke to Extreme, they'd done a report for council and the community board had seen
it. Yeah, and that's on the community.
So waiting for my understanding is they're waiting for council to go through a process, I think, of talking to stakeholders, perhaps. Well, that's my memory of it. Was that discussed at the solid waste?
No, okay. Not yesterday. I'm just looking at my notes.
So I'm checking your notes.
Basically covered everything.
All right.
Right, so I think that's about it. But I just got a message from Ross Wallace, and he said, no, there was no one in the public forum. Applicants. So, and also the next community board hui will be at Te Uku. So watch the space. We'll be updating the community on that as well.
So that'll be in about 6 weeks.
Yep.
Approximately. All right, Lisa, thank you for coming in.